Hello and welcome to GroundWire.
Your community news from coast to coast to coast.
Don't accept that a company is founded and built on morals and justice and allowed to be carried forward on the backs of underpaid and underappreciated workers. If you want real fair trade and ethical coffee, demand that it be union made.
The status quo wants to impose limitations, infringements, or repress any of our civil liberties. They always wave the red herring of fear and security to try to convince the population.
We should continue to advocate for permanent residency upon arrival of migrants in this country.
GroundWire is a grassroots news program brought to you by the National Campus Community Radio Association.
This week's episode is produced by CHRW Radio Western in London, Ontario, on the campus of the beautiful Western University.
I'm Emily Stewart.
And I'm Ed von Adderkass.
On this episode of GroundWire, we're going to go to stories from Montreal and Guelph on the May Day protests.
And hear from CKDU in Halifax on the firing of two Halifax area baristas who wanted to form a union. But first, let's have a look at your headlines. About 40 protesters stood in front of the gates of Kitchener's African Lion Safari on Saturday, the opening day for the wildlife park, calling the treatment of animals unethical. Prior to the protest, Kitchener, Ontario Animal Liberation Alliance co-founder and member of the Grassroots Ontario Animal Liberation Network, Wendy Bones, said that the demonstration opposes the idea of captive animals held as a form of spectacle for profit. In terms of the habitat, Bones stated that there's little grass in the habitats, mostly made of dirt for the elephants, who are allegedly kept in barns during the winter. She also argued that unlike a sanctuary, allowing visitors to travel through the park to watch animals is unethical and more like a circus. According to the website, Veganism is the Future, the African Lion Safari, in part of a species survival plan, is Canada's largest elephant breeding ground. However, a representative told CTV News that the park provides an environment for endangered species to encourage population growth, and the interactive approach treats the animals properly and educates the visitor.
This May Day, about 2,000 Toronto citizens celebrated and demanded for equality for all workers all around the world beginning at City Hall. Mainly, the participants asked for more working rights for immigrants in the city and walked towards the Joe Fresh clothing line offices in response to the factory collapse in Savar, Bangladesh, a week prior where over 400 workers were killed. The march also protested against using cheap labor methods such as outsourcing countries like Bangladesh to manufacture clothing while working in poor conditions. The movement finished at Little Norway Park for Porter Airline workers, who have gone on strike since January while trying to create a collective agreement. The workers encouraged citizens not to fly with Porter Airlines and created a union with the Canadian Office and Professional Employees Union, accusing their boss of poor practices related to safety and health. Marches were also done by Native communities all around Ontario for First Nation rights such as clean drinking water, which is taken away by anti-immigration laws.
Fraser Surrey Docks are proposing to create a terminal where coal is exported on the Fraser River in Surrey, British Columbia. However, the directors of Port Metro Vancouver are against the potential infrastructure, stating that the dust from the coal will cause health problems for local residents and harm the environment. A split vote of 6-5 was taken on April 11th by the Environment and Parks Department, and two open houses for May will be held at Port Metro Vancouver, where the public can ask questions to the representatives of the municipality, BNSF Railways, and Fraser Surrey Docks. Voters taking action on climate change expressed frustration of the consultation process, which consisted of print flyers advertising the project to communities. And the British Columbia Lung Association has stated their opposition last December. If passed, the new terminal could export 4 million tons of coal annually, with a chance of this amount doubling.
Now we go to your features. We now go to Halifax, where a labor dispute has been grabbing attention for the last month.
Don't accept that a company is founded and built on morals and justice and allowed to be carried forward on the backs of underpaid and underappreciated workers. If you want real fair trade and ethical coffee, demand that it be union made.
This is the sound of a rally in Halifax in support of two former employees of a Halifax coffee chain who said that they were fired for trying to unionize. Elijah Williams and Shea Anzuga were both employees of the Just Us coffee chain in Halifax. This is a series of coffee shops that bill themselves as a combination of fair trade practices and co-op style business. Basically, employees are supposed to get a say in the day-to-day management of the business. And this is what led Anzuga originally to apply for the job.
I looked at their website before I applied, and I kind of went through their mandates and kind of all of the information that they have up there. And I was really excited to apply for a job that kind of combined two of the things that I've done in my past and really enjoyed. And I was just looking forward to working with coffee in a you know, social justice mandated kind of a way.
And in going to Just Us, I really had higher expectations. And it's like I felt like the bar that I could hold this company to was a lot higher based on who they say that they are.
But it became clear after working there for a bit that it wasn't altogether straightforward democracy. There were problems.
Finding a lot of instances where we would all take, you know, an hour and a half to decide, okay, we're going to do this one thing, we're going to do it this way. And we come into work over the following week and that whole idea would be scrapped or, you know, without any kind of warning or say, just the team lead being like, no, we're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm. And those decisions and those rules are arbitrary, right? Like mm-hmm. until we actually have a union, they can say that we have as much voice as they want to say. But at the end of the day, all the power still lies with management.
Yeah, we can't really say, hey, you can't do that. You have to put this what we decided in place. They can just go, no, yeah. No.
Actually, we don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And there's no one holding the bosses accountable.
Yeah, exactly.
Charlie Huntley, union leader and employee of Just Us, says that there are numerous little problems in the cafe, like management taking tip money to make up for cash till shortages and being denied statutory mandated breaks. She went on to say that the cafe's repeatedly proclaimed social justice mandate drove home to the baristas the discrepancy between what the company preached and what the company practiced. So they decided to unionize. Management caught wind of this and apparently wasn't happy. And Zuga says what happened next.
The Sunday shift, I was closing with my team lead, and the last conversation I had with her, she asked me those questions. She asked me if I knew anything about staff meeting up outside of work, talking about unions, grievances, and labor boards. What I do believe is that I no longer have a job because I wanted to form a union. Our real issue was that we didn't feel like our concerns were being listened to, and we didn't feel like we had an avenue to bring them up without fear of losing our jobs. A fear that turned out to be very, very real. In wanting to form a union, we were only trying to create an environment where non-co-op members could come to the table and negotiate as equals. This can be an opportunity for real change and growth. For Just Us to prove how it's different from Walmart, from Tim Hortons, from Starbucks.
It should be noted that under the Nova Scotia Trade Unions Act, it is not legal for an employer to ask these questions. On March 27th, when Shay and Elijah went into work, they were told they were being dismissed. The grounds for dismissal were that they were just not a good fit for the co-op. They filed a complaint immediately with the Service Employees International Union, Local 2, in Halifax, saying that Just Us had dismissed them for trying to unionize. So far, Just Us has completely denied the allegations. The rally that you're hearing from now was held on Sunday, April 4th, outside of a branch of Just Us Coffee. A crowd of 150 activists, union leaders, and supporters of the dismissed employees turned up for the protest. Since this demonstration, other protests have been held in the greater Halifax area, and this story has been getting coverage. As of May the 3rd, CUPE, the largest union in the country, has thrown its support behind the two dismissed employees. Shay and Williams want their jobs back, but they want more than that.
In a bigger way, like, I kind of hope that this is a precedent. As far as I know, I don't know of any other coffee shops in the HRM that have formed a union. Also, if you live in Halifax and you're not a student, you don't work in government, you don't work in the harbor, you don't work in the military, like, you're...
So that's, like, nobody, right?
You're working in food service.
Yeah.
Basically, and that's a sector that's pretty much unorganized.
Mm-hmm. I've had so many friends who work in the food service industry, and just to show them that this can be done if Just Us takes that step and does it and recognizes our right to form a union, to show those people that, yeah, you don't have to, you know, go to your shitty job and deal with all those problems that you have, that you can make a difference and you can do it and it will be better for you and for the company you work for and for everyone involved.
For Groundwire, I'm Ed von Adderkass from CHW Radio Western. This story was prepared with files from CKDU and help. The month of May began with the International Workers' Day, an annual event celebrating the trade union movement worldwide. While in Canada, Labor Day is the official holiday for labor, May 1st has long been a day of activism against globalization and capitalism, as much as it has been a day of celebration. Events were scheduled across Canada from Victoria to St. John's. On that day in Montreal, the anti-capitalist demo was declared illegal 1.5 hour after it started. The police proceeded to kettle and arrest in total 447 people. The arrested were held until 3 a.m. for some, released in the middle of the night in the middle of nowhere. CKUT in Montreal spoke with Emma Smith, the leader of the CLAC, a Quebec student union, about their anti-capitalist protest on May 1st. Let's take a listen.
Hi, Emma. Could you describe last night's May Day rally for me?
Yeah. What we saw was a very boisterous and energetic demonstration. In fact, there was a demonstration that began in front of City Hall, but to which two other marches converged onto, one from the west of the downtown core and one from east. It was, like I said, there was a lot of energy. There was a marching band. There was obviously banners and flags and people with children in strollers and all kinds of things. And the march, after converging in front of the City Hall, eventually started to make its way over to the private club 357C, which unfortunately we were never able to actually reach.
Okay, and what other organizations were represented?
Well, this was a march that was entirely organized by the CLAC. Which is the Montreal Anti-Capitalist Convergence. So I'm sure, I mean, obviously many groups and individuals attended, but as in terms of organizing the march itself, it was CLAC.
All right. And why was the demonstration declared illegal and at what time?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, the demonstration was declared illegal by the police forces under P6, which is the controversial municipal bylaw of which the additions that were made to it last May are the controversial parts of it, namely that any protest organizers have to notify and negotiate with the police the routes of any demonstrations that they might be organizing, as well as rendering illegal the wearing of any kind of mask at a demonstration. So it's still too early to say which provisions exactly under the bylaw were ultimately the ones that were used for all 447 people that were ticketed last night. But those are some of the provisions that are problematic.
Okay. And why were the protesters headed to Destination 357C last night?
357C is a private club that has been mentioned on numerous occasions in the Charbonneau Commission, which is still underway, as a meeting point for several of the political and business elite and criminal organized crime, where various like backroom dealings and corruption and collusion was taking place, all in what the club describes as a very sumptuous environment.
And could you describe the austerity measures that you were fighting against both last night and in general?
Well, I mean, austerity measures, there are so many that are underway, and just the continual grinding poverty that instead of getting better, it just continues to get worse. You know, whether we're talking about cuts to the funding of social housing, or if we're talking about the Harper government's complete reconstruction of unemployment insurance as we know it. You know, there's any number of fronts that we can look at. Of course, it goes without saying, you know, tuition fees being one of the topics that was very much highlighted in the past year and a half. So the increased cost of living, the continuing weakening of people's ability to earn a living wage, as well as the precarity of jobs. I mean, all of these are part of like a general wave of austerity that's sweeping not just Canada, but the world over.
Right. And why is P6 happening now, and what role is it playing in enforcing these austerity measures?
Well, I think it's no surprise that P6 comes on the heels of a very successful campaign, which began with, strictly speaking, the question of student fees and increasing them. But as anybody who followed these protests last year could say, it immediately broadened into a far bigger discussion than just strictly speaking about increased student fees. It was really about what kind of priorities we set for ourselves as a society with regards to spending, with regards to the distribution of resources and wealth. And so starting to question a lot of those things. And I think the tenacity and the commitment of the protesters who were far more than just students has been very uncomfortable for many in power, especially as they continue to be under the gun with the Charbonneau Commission, which only becomes more and more shocking and revealing in how far the corruption goes.
Okay. And P6, it's ostensibly put in place to protect small business owners, no, and citizens, but is it really protecting anyone?
I think that all of these claims are really, it's just a great spin that we see in other forms at other times where whenever the status quo wants to impose limitations, infringements, or repress any of our civil liberties, whether it's the ability to peaceably assemble or whatnot, they always wave the red herring of fear and security to try to convince the population that these are reasonable limitations. And I think that it is. I think it's just that there's no call for these things because any property damage or any fears that small business or owners might have with regards to protesting or with regards to things that might happen to their private property for whatever reason are amply covered by the current criminal code. So there's no reason to then just completely eliminate the ability to peaceably assemble, I think, or to impose that these things have to be negotiated through the police. Obviously, that's going to be problematic. Obviously, it's going to lead to the police managing how and when people can protest, regardless of whether or not criminal activity were to take place. So it goes far and beyond its stated intent.
All right, and we're just about out of time. Do you have anything to add?
I would just say that despite the 447 arrests yesterday, which, you know, some might try to claim were done to stop a marginal group of people who were doing the very things that people often try to tag on to certain types of protesters, I'd highlight that the police used P6 this morning, or so parents claim, at a elementary school that where parents were simply trying to highlight the dangers of fast cars and traffic directly outside of their children's elementary school. And P6 was used as a justification, according to parents there, to stop parents from having their protest. They hadn't informed the police beforehand. All they were doing was crossing at a stoplight when the light was green. And so I think we're starting to see the absurdity of these kinds of laws. I think it's important that we should always keep in mind that when people are being under attack, when their basic civil freedoms are under attack, there's no such thing, oh, it's just them. It's always everybody, and everyone has to have these basic freedoms.
That was Emma Smith, speaking to the off-the-hour host at CKUT. Montreal was not the only city to hold events on International Workers' Day. Guelph, a suburban Ontario town an hour outside of Toronto, held their own events. Mary Carl Guiao has more.
I'm Mary Carl Guiao, reporting for Groundwire. With the aim of contributing to building a worldwide common front against capitalism, austerity, and war, a group of 30 chanting and sign-waving residents of Guelph, Ontario, rallied in front of City Hall on the early eve of April 30th to pay our respects and spread the word about our labor history and International Workers' Day. The rally's speakers list included members of Fuerza Puerza, QP3913, Migrante Canada, Young Communist League Guelph, Guelph Student Mobilization Committee, and OPERG.
if we can, more, a little bit more intentionally as we gather here, ground ourselves in acknowledging those who have come before us and honor them, all the freedom fighters, in particular, those that have gone through the hard road of being the only worker or the only queer worker or the only person of color worker or the only woman worker or the only worker with disability. Let's take a moment to ground ourselves in the legacy of people working to contribute to creating racial justice, queer liberation, fighting transphobia, creating disability justice and community building in the workplace, creating immigrant justice and migrant justice. So everyone who's worked to fight criminalization, isolation, shame, self-hatred, and invisibility in the workplace. Our first speaker up is Denise Martins, who is representing QP3913.
Half of the workers entering the labor market are now in precarious jobs. What this means in the context of Ontario is an organized attack against our mothers, our sisters, and our best friends, and all the women that we know. Women are disproportionately affected by precarious work in Ontario. 7 out of every 10 part-time workers are women. And if, despite these facts, you still choose to believe that somehow we have achieved equality in this country, I would like to bring the date April 9th to your attention. April 9th was a couple weeks ago, and it was very far, far away from New Year's. And April 9th is actually equal pay day here in Ontario. This means that because women earn 30% of what men earn in Ontario, a woman would have to work up until April 9th to earn the same amount that a man earned in 2012. So she would essentially have to work an extra 3 months to make up for that. Despite this very clear trend, programs that help women deal with this form of institutional discrimination have been continuously cut by the Harper government. We saw a very clear example of this last year when Harper cut the Women's Health Contribution Program, which funded 6 women's health research programs in the country. This was a 16-year-old program that saw an end under Harper's regime. The Tories actually closed 12 of 16 offices of the Status of Women in Canada, eliminated the funding of any women's organization involved in advocacy, and amended the Act on Equitable Compensation to prevent the use of courts to advance pay equity. Despite the request to launch a national public inquiry into the matter, the Conservative government is still failing to act on the issue of the over 500 Aboriginal women who have disappeared or been murdered in Canada. Something that happened much closer here, Kitchener's Conservative MP, Stephen Woodworth, last year introduced a private member's bill, Motion 312, which sought to re-examine the definition of human being in the criminal code so as to recriminalize abortion. This is disgusting. This should not happen.
Next up, we have Perry Sorio, and he is with Migrante Canada. He's also with Bayan Canada, and he's going to be speaking a lot about Filipino workers in general in Canada.
Happy May Day, everybody. In other parts of the world today, big or small crowds are gathering of workers to celebrate the resistance against capitalism. So today, we must celebrate because, like the speaker have said today, Chicago lead the way. To us, the challenge is to continue the struggle. And this struggle can only be built as we continue to educate ourselves, organize ourselves, and keep on mobilizing until we reach the victory of the working class. Yesterday was a good day for announcement. The federal government announced changes in temporary foreign worker program. We can view these changes in two ways. The first is we can view it as a victory because of public pressure, the arrogance of the federal government, the conservative government, cannot anymore hold on. They have bowed to the pressure. It's a victory because finally, Jason Kenney said, they're stopping the 15% less payment for wages of migrant workers. So that's a victory for us. But at the same time, we should view the change as cosmetic because it doesn't address the exploitation and abuses that migrant workers are encountering right now. We should continue to advocate for permanent residency upon arrival of migrants in this country. The sad part of this argument and discussion on migrant workers is they're looked upon, migrant workers are looked upon as colonizers taking away Canadian jobs. Those are not jobs taken away from Canadians. We know very well who designed this program. Capitalists designed this program so that they can freely move people and not just only goods.
You've been listening to the recordings of the recent May Day rally in Guelph. I'll leave everyone with another song from Guelph-based talent Fellow Worker. I'm Mary Carl Giao reporting for Groundwire.
So he says, we are cold. And he says, we're on strike in La Huelga. And we don't like the concessions that they're demanding. Oh yeah, there's the cops. So he says, why are you here? And he says, workers' rights. And the police officer is in a union. But will it cross the line? These songs won't make the charts. But it's where everything starts. Without workers, now where would you be? Dias de los Latinos, voces de la frontera, sin los trabajadores, ¿qué vamos a hacer? ¿Qué vamos a hacer? Now where would you be? So you say, you are free. Let's talk about that for a while. We're free, right? Oh, I see looks of disbelief. So you say, you are free. So you say, come with me. To the front of every picket line, a place where workers have their dignity. So it says, I'll be there. With my fist in the air. Porque la lucha continúa con la gente del mundo con solidaridad. Cause labor is entitled to all it creates. Labor is entitled to all it creates. Labor is entitled to all it creates. Fellow workers, stand with me now. Labor is entitled to all it creates. Labor is entitled to all it creates. Labor is entitled to all it creates. So fellow workers, stand with me now.
And that was all the time we have for Groundwire this week. Groundwire is a grassroots news program brought to you by the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
All of our episodes are available for listening and podcasting at groundwire.ncra.ca. If you're interested in contributing as a journalist, get in touch with us by email at groundwire@ncra.ca. This edition was produced at CHW Radio Western in London, Ontario. We thank contributors Mary Kyle Giao from CFRU, Asaf Rashid from CKDU's From the Margins, and CKUT Off the Hour. This has been Ed von Attercast
and Emily Stewart. From all of us at Groundwire, thanks for tuning in.